This is David Rovics, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
Welcome to the Climate Action Radio Show, which can be heard on community radio at 3CR in Melbourne and Skid Row in Sydney. My name is Vivian Langford, and salut Babette. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and pay tribute to the decades-long legacy of Aboriginal fights for land rights and against the destructive mining projects that are fueling climate change. In particular, we acknowledge the Wangan and Jagalingu cultural custodians and their ongoing opposition to coal mining on their lands in central Queensland, and to the Gomeroi traditional custodians' continuing opposition to coal and gas on their land in New South Wales. It is vital at this late stage in history that we all learn to care for country. It will always be Aboriginal land, and now is our time to all stand up for and protect it.
Yeah.
It's Christmas time, and I hope all our listeners enjoy the summer shows we've put together for you until mid-February. Meanwhile, today we'll take you to Newcastle and central Queensland. The Stop Adani campaign mobilised thousands of people over many years. 16,000, for example, at the National Day of Action, banks and financiers backing away from the project, and legal action delaying it. Even MPs wearing Stop Adani earrings and T-shirts showed how popular it was. It made the world aware of Adani's ambition to export even more climate-changing coal than had ever before been exported from Queensland. The Carmichael mine did actually open in 2021, but it operates now at a fraction of its original scale. In 2022, the Wangan and Jagalingu cultural custodians marked their first year of occupation at Wadanagu, and many of you listeners will have been up there to ceremonies. They've made it very much a welcoming space for all kind of climate action people, Stop Adani people, and just people interested in being invited in to Aboriginal cultural spaces. Wadanagu is just on the perimeter of the mine. Adrian Burugubba and Murrawa Johnson spoke to us several times about the springs they were protecting. And then Cody McAvoy was named Bob Brown Environmentalist of the Year. Rising Tide won it the next year. Today we'll talk to Cody, whose name really is Gurudjula. He's fresh from the International Climate Conference in Brazil, COP30, and I had just missed him at Rising Tide in Newcastle. You'll hear him in a delightful interview with me and with Beck Horridge from 3CR. But first, here is part two of Matthew Jeffrey, who we chatted with last week, and he spoke to us at Newcastle's Rising Tide event. I'm here in Newcastle, and I have a gentleman here called Matthew Jeffrey, and he's a Wadi Wadi man. He's part of Rising Tide.
And I just wanted to explain as well, Wadi Wadi country is part of the Dharawal Nation. It's in the Royal National Park of New South Wales, from Bundina down to Wollongong and then to out to Narraway. So that's my place of reference. And I think when we look at my place of reference, it's a place that has been mostly unspoiled through this kind of luck of colonialism, in a way, to be the first designated national park. But as you say, when people come from very far away, I mean, I've been the one helping to organise buses and asking other friends in the First Nations volunteers team, who are allies, to help, you know, get the flights from remote areas. And I think even with such little resources, what we as mob try to spend on fighting, it's not just because we're fighting for we're not just fly in, fly out activists. We're fighting for ourselves, our futures, our existential futures. And so we put our money towards these things. We put our energy, really. We put our emotional and spiritual energy to come and also share parts of our culture alongside what we're struggling against, because not only are we just oppressed peoples, but we are peoples that have great strength, great cultural strength. And I think what's been on display here this weekend thus far at Rising Tides Protestival in Newcastle has been a display of that strength and of that coming together. And as you said, sometimes we just need meeting spots. We just need meeting spots to share these struggles so we can learn from each other, learn tactics.
Things happen when you get together, and it's no threat, and you'll gain more strength through that. I just have one more question. I know you've had quite a bit to do with trade unions. Tell me about how the trade unions interact with this problem of climate change and action against coal and transition of jobs. I'm sure you think of a lot about it.
Yeah, I think that there's lots of areas where I've been in placing myself over the years to help with this fight, to have unions be more on board with taking climate change action. I guess most recently my work to ensure that the ASU a few years ago supported the Gomeroi mob against Santos, that the Unions New South Wales took this seriously and was part of the effort to get a campaign organiser out of Unions New South Wales and the MUA, self-organising people to go out to Coonabarabran and see for themselves the beauty of the Pilliga Forest, understand from local firefighters, from local council members, from local Aboriginal elders and farmers, the extent of that problem and what that threat represents to the Great Artesian Basin and to all of our future living standards. I mean, we may well rely on that Great Artesian Basin for fresh water in a climate-changing future. So that's just one of the campaigns which I've still got great stock in and am assisting with. But I think that unions in general have to still step up in the climate change space, not only because workers' conditions are the core business of unions, but because all of our class interests are represented in fighting for a just climate. The economy sits atop of the environment.
Yeah, climate change is so complex and it feels like a titanic shift in the economy, but it's not unthinkable, and it's all these different thought streams. I feel the Indigenous thinking is coming from a different place. People who are in the trade union working in the industries, it comes from a different place, and then the people sitting there reading theory in the universities, a different place again.
Yeah, I think all of these places do need more meeting spots to come together to share that vision of the future, because what we get is a lot of the time is willful misrepresentations of what a just transition could look like. And what it is it's affording us energy independence and self-reliance again. It's saying no to new fossil fuels, new coal and gas. It's saying yes to community control. It's not letting these fossil fuel monopolies then take control of the offshore wind farms. It's putting that back into the hands of the people in whatever version of that works, whether that is, you know, a nationalised grid or local community control and local Aboriginal control. There's been some fantastic research done. Can't remember her name right now, I'm so sorry. But there's been some fantastic research done specifically on Aboriginal communities along the east coast of New South Wales and how they see the energy transition. And so, you know, what came out of that research done out of the University of Sydney was that there was an eagerness to have Aboriginal community control over microgrid systems to improve self-reliance, to get rid of the two largest costs in our society are housing, you know, rent and energy. And so energy is sort of fundamental to having an economy which all can be prosperous and all can do what they want with that energy. And we have the technology finally as a human species to afford unlimited energy to our fellow neighbours. It's just about taking it out of private hands.
Thank you so much. So that was Matthew Jeffrey, who's a very impressive speaker, I can say, with Rising Tide. You're the Indigenous coordinator, Wadi Wadi man from down Wollongong way. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This is a song by Gurujula, which I play with permission.
Yeah. This goes out to my muddy mob down there fighting in the Pilliga against Santos. If you ever want to grow a pair, now is the time. Hack your genetics and let our powers combine. Uncut some planet, you're ready, so yell out the battle cry. Rock up to fight, they were about to die, but they scatter like flies. Stack on courage, black fellas flourish with knowledge. Attack the rigs and go scuttle quick up in the forest. Fuck the monarch, we gonna wanna see some heart from ya. Beating hard, come on, bruh. This ain't the end of the road, it's the start of the beaten path. We're defending our home, and they got it wrong right when they said it's in the past. But I sit on a coal mine, setting up for a long fight. And it's a constant reminder that they're never gone like someone rocking the boat. They thought we're not gonna know. We're stopping it though. Pull up, put a lock on it, then hopping and go. Their profits are dropping, they're up in smoke. This is the G up you need, bruh. I wanna see ya complete the procedure. Here comes a procedure. Fear runs in their features. I can see it from their tear ducts. This is the G up you need, bruh. I wanna see ya complete the procedure. Here comes a procedure. Fear runs in their features. I can see it from their tear ducts. I'm the knowledge keeper, so forage deeper under the symbolic tree for the sweeter eaters, while paying homage to the teachers that reared us into fearless motherfuckers. I was a peer to the grassroots leaders, believing that they were proper, speaking down to coppers, teaching how to prop us up against town officers. Guns mean nothing to a mob of pissed off black fellas, ready to turn a city to a stack of ashes. Power and numbers, they'll cower for cover. 11th hours clicked over, there's conscripts now, brothers. No problems with skin colors, we have more in common than what you think. It's the government doing it purposely, keeping us divided with our undivided attention focused on football and tennis. How we can pretend this ain't big. This has to get sorted. Fight for your kids' inheritance. It's fresh water, they're gonna need something to drink. This is the G up you need, bruh. I wanna see ya complete the procedure. Here comes a procedure. Fear runs in the features. I can see it from their tear ducts. This is the G up you need, bruh. I wanna see ya complete the procedure. Here comes a procedure. Fear runs in the features. I can see it from their tear ducts. This is an annexation, man. The battle station. Stop being cattle and just rattle the cages. Break out of your chains and go Django. Right on the main road. So say no. We don't play bro. Coppers in plain clothes. They know how to cause a riot, distort the message with violence. Important that is kept silent. Your judges have a mistrial. You thought you had me with your non-jurisdictional, proven fictional system. Unqualified ministers send them to prison. Use them as cannon fodder, lambs to the slaughter. They're demanding orders, expanding supporters. Never managed to corner us. Take us to court, we can afford it. Exposing the rot, protecting our sons and daughters. You've chosen your course. Head on collision with a man on a mission. I stand on this wisdom. I'm planning on planting this vision. Listen, no understanding. So you panic and prison our children. Then they vanish. We've had it. We'll manage ourselves again. This is the G up you need, bruh. I wanna see ya complete the procedure. Here comes a procedure. Fear runs in the features. I can see it from their tear ducts. This is the G up you need, bruh. I wanna see ya complete the procedure. Here comes a procedure. Fear runs in the features. I can see it from their tear ducts.
The blockade of the world's biggest coal port at Mullumbimby, Newcastle, was just the beginning. Next year is going to be very hard for coal and gas. I've got Gurujula here from the Wangan and Jagalingu people to talk about how First Nations people are working with Rising Tide, and also a little bit about his experience at the climate conference, COP30, in Belém. So welcome to the Climate Action Show, Gurujula. Tell us first what it's like living at Wadanagu.
Mine, so I've been living here at Wadanagu now for 1568 days today, and we live in the middle of the bush. It's 2.5 to 3 hours drive to the closest town. There's no phone reception out here. We have to run off Starlink. We have to deal with the pressures of the environment, with hot days and wet summers, and we're on the northern section of the Adani Carmichael coal mine at the moment, so we're actually stopping him from expanding into the northern section just by simply being here, because the Human Rights Act allows me the right to practice a ceremony. And it's the police and the government that don't have the right to hinder me. So it's not the mining company, it's actually the state government and the police are actually bound by the Human Rights Act to not stop me. So because they can't stop me. There's no one else coming to the party to stop me because the mining company has to take me to court. But it's been 4 5 years almost next year, and they still haven't started a court case. So being here on this northern section of the road basically stops them from creating another three or four open cut pits and two or three underground holes to the west of us here. So we're holding a lot of ground here. It's about 12,000 hectares on the northern section here. A lot of it is untouched old growth. So we have some really big old ironbark trees, 700 plus year old box trees, some really good remnants of the olden days and what the trees used to look like. So, just living here, we're able to stop the expansion basically. So
Yeah, well,
yeah.
that's such great news because a lot of the listeners I know will have been up to visit you over those 5 years. You know, when the Adani was really, everyone was going mad about Adani, but you're persisting, and that's so terrific, holding up that amount of land and underground land too. That's fantastic. That's like we had Rising Tide 2 weeks ago, and they were holding up a couple of coal ships. It was a massive number of people to do that, but you're sort of doing this with a few people and just calmly doing your ceremonies, just keeping your springs free. But I'd like to know how the campaign against that Adani Bravos coal mine has sort of changed your life, and how do you think it's impacted or inspired climate action?
Well, to be honest with you, from like 2007 until 2011, I had worked at multiple coal mines throughout central Queensland, and I had seen the destruction firsthand. I'd seen what they have done to the land and to the water tables, to the poison and what they're pumping back into rivers. And by 2011, I had end of 2011, start of 2012, I'd finished up doing cultural heritage work, and I'd become resentful of mining companies, not for anything else other than knowing how destructive they are and how much land that they have destroyed so far. And so, Adani came along in 2012 with some shonky deal. It was like the worst that anyone's ever been offered in Queensland, and for the size of the mine that they wanted. And so our people turned around and they all said no. And I guess I've been a main driving factor behind pushing my old man along the whole time, keeping him on track and making sure that, the job isn't finished yet. And it's my hard-headedness, I think, that keeps me going, and I don't think I'll ever stop. It's been 13 years. It's been such a massive, long, protracted war, but I feel like we're starting to win now, being on the ground. My father went through five federal court cases and got bankrupted for nearly $675,000. And lucky he didn't own a house or anything, because they weren't able to take anything from him. You can't draw blood out of a stone, hey? So the auditors went through our whole family and found that we own nothing, and they scratched their head and wondered, why are we doing this for nothing? And it's just like, well, it's not for nothing. It's about principles of the fact of that we've told you no, you can't destroy our spring. And we're going to continue to say no. We don't care how much money you try to throw at this, what type of deals you try to make. So we've maintained our no the whole time. And so this is just as a carry-on effect from all of that. We're just exhausting all legal avenues at the same time. We have a court case with the Doomabulla case happening. There's hydrocarbons being leaked back down into the springs, which indicates that the mine is affecting the springs. And so and their dewatering bores are drawing down the water levels as well, so they could potentially dry the springs. So these are hazards that are happening right now. that I'm having to wait on the government and their slow processes to come up with a decision. And even though they know that they are destroying the spring, they don't want to change it and they don't want to fix it because that means that they'll give us a win and they don't want us to win.
Oh, but you're going to win in the long run, but good on this
It, eventually we will win,
You are going to
but
win.
it's their complacency and their willingness to jack up and continue to disrespect Indigenous people just for the sake of propping up a mining company. You see, this that I don't understand the reasoning that some people have, you know what I mean? It's just like, sure enough, you like mining, who cares? But why support a mine that destroys water tables and that's destroying springs? Like, have some standards about yourself. You know, it's like you have to have bad minds to have good minds. You know, they can't just all be good. And so, this turned from just trying to stop a mining company to a reoccupation. So I've told the government that, well, this is my tribal homelands of the Wagalbarra people, and I've come back to claim this. And if this is a country based on you own what you can defend, well, I've been defending this for nearly 5 years now, and it's like, this isn't a protest. This is, I'm living here now and you can't move me. The Human Rights Act affords me the right to not be forcefully assimilated. So that means I don't have to understand that there is other rules and regulations in regards to land. All I have to understand it was always Wagalbarra, and there's no agreement that has been signed over to sign our land away to them.
Oh,
So
this is ground shifting. This is shifting the ground. But in a bigger picture, when you were at Newcastle, Moolabinba, there was a yarning tent, and I heard, I didn't go in, but I heard that there were Tiwi Island people there, that Antonia. I spoke to Matthew Jeffrey and people from the Gomeroi country. So there's a common thread here. And then you were in Brazil and you must have met people there. There's a common thread, people
yeah.
occupying their land saying, no, we're having a big game shift here now, a big paradigm shift. All of that system that worked well for the colonial powers over hundreds of years, it's got to stop because now it's choking all of us.
That's it. And their own greed is destroying everybody. And the same common theme that I can see everywhere is people are allowing their environment to be destroyed for a quick buck. You know, you look in the Amazon where the Amazonians are fighting against land clearing for cattle. The same as Queensland, 86% of Queensland has been cleared for beef. They've destroyed the Garden of Eden for their own selfish gain. And when I tell people that this government and the people that support this government that allows the destruction of nature are children, children voting in children. Because only children don't care about what happens next. Because they can't comprehend what happens, what the actions of
Short-sighted,
their
short-sighted.
consequences are. So they're children. So we treat them like children. We treat them like their brains are not fully developed yet. And we say to them, sorry, you don't get a choice and you don't get a voice to say that what you think should happen to nature. Because you don't have the ability, the cognitive ability to be able to discern on what your actions are doing. They have no idea about water tables, yet they give them the right to destroy water tables. These children are just destroying everything because money allows them to have the power to do it.
Well, look, tell us of some of the examples. I'd like to know a bit more about the Tiwi Islands because I heard that they've joined up with people in Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, Timor-Leste, you know, like they've got this common sea country and that's being encroached on by, what is it, Santos Gas
Santos,
undersea. Tell us about them.
they're forming an alliance because Santos wanted to drill offshore from the Tiwi Islands and they tried to sneak it through without them knowing. But the Tiwi Islands are now forming an alliance with Papua New Guinea, Timor-Leste, and trying to figure out this alliance that they can all work together to combat mining, and that's a common theme that we have across, whether it's Gomeroi, whether it's Tiwi, or whether it's even the Burrup, like these all common denominators are mining companies keep pushing even though the groups say no, because the mining companies think that they can take whatever they want. And this is the biggest letdown of the Australian government, is they take the side of mining companies over Aboriginal people, even though it's their land, even though it's their tribal homelands that they have a responsibility to, where most Australians don't feel like they have a personal responsibility to an area. They just say that Australia is their home. They don't actually even pinpoint a certain location and say, this is where I'm from, and this is where my children will come from, and this is where my children's children will come from, and we will always come from here. No, they just move around this whole continent on where the better weather or where the better job is. There actually is no tie to a certain location on this whole continent, so they have this idea that the whole continent is theirs. But you ask any Indigenous person, and I will never tell you that I own the Burrup. I'll never tell you that I own Uluru, because I just don't. I don't own the whole continent. This whole continent is not mine. The only thing that I can say that is mine is this tiny little area of Wadanungu, and it's mine as a responsibility, not mine to be able to mine it, or not mine to be able to sell it.
This is Stephen Pigram from up Broomway, Yawuru Country, and it's great to be down in Melbourne, and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio. Been here for a long time. Where I belong.
We're talking to Garajula from the Wangan and Jagalingu people in central Queensland, where they occupy land on the edge of the Adani Bravos coal mine. In Brazil, I interviewed people from Suma Uma, way up near Ecuador. They'd come all the way down the Amazon, and they said, we are at war. And I said, what's the war? He said, we are at war for nature, because there's a war on nature, and the enemies of nature are these short-sighted people who are mining everything and logging everything and sticking cattle in everywhere. Well, they're the other side, and we're the warriors against that, and we're preserving. And in Brazil, they do have, huge trouble preserving indigenous lands, those big territories. But it's the lungs of the world, so they're getting the government on side. Did you find some people there talking about that bigger picture, like Western governments even paying them to keep their forests intact and to preserve
Yeah,
them?
look,
Did they talk about that?
yeah, that I heard some Amazonians talking about the land clearing for cattle
Yeah,
in their
very
areas.
big. Yep.
And it's the same as here. When the Amazonians went off and they tried to get into COP, and they had this big protest, and then Brazil demarcated like a 1.5 million hectares or something like that of land. And it's like, did it take them to do that? And it's also the fact is, who is Brazil, and what is Brazil, and who gives them the right to even markate land in the first place that's not yours?
The line on the map.
It's this overarching idealism that is still going on in today, where Indigenous people just don't have the right to say no. It's like what's happening right now up here. There's so many people that have the ability to make this company stop tomorrow, whether that be the environmental, state environmental, the federal environmental, the premier, the prime minister, the attorney generals of state and federal, the governor general. All of these people can all stop this mine tomorrow. And who are these people? They're a bunch of nobodies.
Children.
They're a bunch of children that have been installed by another bunch of dumb children. Because they've been bred to be dumb.
Yeah.
You know, this is the common occurrence that happens in this country, is that they measure a man's worth by his work. And because of they measure his worth by his work, it distracts you. So they allow them to drain everything from this place. The problem is Australia is still looked at like a colony and not like a country. Because when you're looked at like a colony, you drain everything of that place because you have the thing of, oh, well, we're going to have to take off soon.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, we'll just take whatever we want.
Yeah.
Even places like Norway, they have implemented things to stop mining companies from taking everything. Because they actually love their country.
And their fisheries and their ocean. Yeah,
exactly. You know, like, they don't have, this country has to learn that you don't have to allow people to take everything.
Yeah. It's very short-sighted. I know.
But, like,
I'll tell you someone who I admire over in South America, Colombia. I don't know if he was at the conference, but President Gustavo Petro. And he's come across my notice because, first of all, he stopped coal to Israel. He said, well, they're doing war crimes, so we're not exporting coal. And Brazil, about half, Colombia's economy, it depends a lot on fossil fuel exports. But and then he said, we're going to do no new contracts. We'll honor the contracts we've got, but no new oil, coal or gas contracts. So he's really, you know, he's putting his head above the parapet, sticking his neck out. But he's also going to have a conference next year with Netherlands. That's why I say next year there's going to be trouble for coal, oil and gas, because that's going to be a very big conference. And I asked some people at Newcastle, oh, well, you think the Australian government will go? And they all just said, they'll be too busy having lunch with Gina Reinhardt or someone. They won't be there.
Yeah.
But I think we should be there. And I think you should be there, like Indigenous people, because at that conference, it's in Colombia in April, it's going to be just about fossil fuels, just about getting rid of fossil fuels, phasing them out. You need a plan. And he says, well, I'm happy to be the one who coordinates this plan. And the COP conference was behind it. They agreed that they should be behind it. So would you consider that? Do you think you and some of those other people who are at Newcastle, those Indigenous people who know what you're talking about, who know about that, do you think they'd be there to argue that, you know, why all together we have this common theme of getting rid of fossil fuel?
I guess we just have to look at it differently and say, well, how can we, like, I was talking to Australian Conservation Council lady when I walked past her. She actually went to Wadanungu, came to Wadanungu, and I met her on the streets of Belém. And they're talking about, like, how to better phase out fossil fuels. And I said, instead of trying to come across and say that we're trying to phase out fossil fuels, why don't we say we want ultimate protection of water tables and springs?
Yeah.
That means no mining companies can ever touch our water tables. So that kind of just, that cancels out so much stuff, you know what I mean? Like, because mining companies need to get down past water tables to get to the coal.
And gas too.
And gas as well. So gas, like with the gas, they've got to shoot this radioactive stuff down into the water tables.
Well, that's a good argument. That's a good argument.
Yes,
that could be part of that conference. How to do it? Like everyone should put their head together. Like how to do it? I think
protection of water is the ultimate number one, driving force.
Yeah.
Of it all, you know, regardless of other things that stopping all these fossil fuels will bring, all the positive benefits, in reality, the most positive benefit is the saving of the water.
Yeah.
You know, and people just don't understand how long this water has been here for and how it's being contaminated now. They tried to tell me that Australia is now a country and it's civilized because it has buildings, but you can't tell me a river where you can go and drink out of anymore because they've all been poisoned, or they're all contaminated from farming or mining or whatever it is. And it's just like, well, how are we advanced now? How have we advanced in our way of thinking that we can't even go down to the river and drink? We have to rely off a government to give us water. So protection of water is my main thing out of all of that, because that way then it's like they can't use the argument against me of, oh well, you can't, oh, you're using all of these things, you know what I mean? Like, why are you fighting against mining companies? I said, like, I'm fighting against everything and every company that's destroying the water. And if that includes mining companies in it, so be it.
I think you'd have agreement from people all over the world because water is being threatened all over the world.
When you compare an old growth forest compared to a forest which is regrowing after a disturbance like logging, they're actually quite different ecosystems. Generally, like older, wetter forests slow down the path of fire, and this is actually quite a well-known phenomenon. Historically, these big, large fires have been quite rare, but what we've seen in the last 20 years is they're becoming quite a lot more common. So we've had three in the last 20 years. This is definitely because of climate change, which is making our ecosystems a lot drier and the fire weather more intense.
3CR, your station in struggle and solidarity.
Jump online and give what you can. Go to 3cr.org.au.
We're talking to Garajula from the Wangan and Jagalinga people in central Queensland, where they occupy land on the edge of the Adani Bravus coal mine. I'd like to throw to Beck now. Beck's with us. She couldn't come to Newcastle, but she wanted to interview you.
Hi, Wadamuli. Did I
Wadamuli.
Get it right?
Yeah.
Wadamuli. I last saw you down in Canberra, I remember, actually. Don't know if you remember, it was in the Rose Garden down at the Aboriginal Tent Embassy.
Yes.
The beautiful Rose Garden, about a year ago now. And I just wanted to say, have you had any new insights or inspirations on how, together we are all going to fight this climate challenge? What are we going to do? I know that money has power and that we have people power and we have a scientific truth and a lot of Indigenous credentials. What are we going to do? I don't know at this point other than talk about it.
I guess we need soldiers that are committed, and we need like rising tide soldiers, but we need millions of them. We need millions of people that inevitably shut everything down, because that's the only way that things will change. And the more we'll get more army soldiers, the moment that the middle class start to drop out, and the moment that people go, oh well, it's not worth me working anymore. And then they'll start to do something that they enjoy, when that what they enjoy is fighting for nature. Because anyone that has fought for nature and has fought on the front lines of nature knows it's fulfilling. No, knows that like what they're doing is a good thing. That's why you see all them knitting nanas out there, and there's heaps of them, you know what I mean? And they put their bodies on the front line because it's a drug. It's literally a drug. Once you start doing it, that you can't stop, because you enjoy that feeling. You enjoy the heart racing when the cops are coming. But you also know at the same time as you're doing something right. So it's kind of like an oxymoron at the same time, you know? And so I guess it's like trying to get more people, because people power is the thing that's going to change it, you know what I mean? Like, whether it's blocking off ports or whether it's blocking rail lines to stop coal, and literally grind the whole system to a halt. before, because that's they don't sometimes they don't understand things until it affects their money, and when it starts affecting their money, then they'll have to come and have a an explanation, you know. And so I guess, you know, we have to be creative, because the things that we've done in the past, they've seemed to just walk straight over us. And so it's like, well, how do we become more creative and slow them down in the same time? And you know, it feels like an uphill battle. It feels like a protracted war, and you know, like, are we ever going to win this? But like, just being here, you know, instantly changes my mind back from that of like, when what do you mean we're not going to win this? We are winning this, and then we're just getting small wins along the way. And so I guess we need more people. We need lots more people, and we need to be able to get them from other different walks of life. We need to be able to pick them up and bring them along as well, and say that it's your problem too. And you know, we're all hoping of either, you know, things will change. Otherwise, if everything collapses, then there's no work, which means no fossil fuels, you know. So it's either Armageddon or change, you know, like chicken or beef.
I agree. I agree with you that when I was at Newcastle, I just didn't want to leave in the end. I just sat in this tent. I was so hot and tired. There's this other older woman plonked down on the pillows, on the cushions in this tent, just exhausted. And she was so much on the same wavelength as me. And everybody I talked to seemed to get it. You didn't have to explain things. Like you say, like you weren't talking to children. Everyone knows a lot and exchanges information. And that excitement of doing something, it was symbolic, but you saw people power there. And just think of what's been happening regarding Palestine, this massive movement of trade unions in Rome and Genoa, and stopping the ports. They said, we're going to shut down European ports. They will do it. And this, we're starting to see people, as you say, when the middle class maybe start to think, oh, yeah, I could do more with my life than this. You're leading the way.
I think the younger generation, like my generation, are so caught up in just trying to survive because they have no other option. You know what I mean? Like, I was born 3 years too young, so I missed the housing boom. You know, by the time I become a qualified mechanic, houses were already four times the price as they were when I first started my apprenticeship. You know what I mean? So it's like that they already priced me out of the market, so I couldn't even buy a house when I was become a when I became a qualified mechanic. So it's like I just lived my life then above the poverty line, basically just with a job and just working from paycheck to paycheck, which majority of you know, millennials are in that state at the moment, where they don't have anything to fall back on. They're all just working. And the moment that life becomes hard for them is the moment that things will jack up, because they're the ones that have been dispossessed the most, because everyone before them had the chance to make something of themselves, I guess. Not even to mention the Gen Z is, you know what I mean? Like, they're completely up the river without a paddle. I'm surprised if they could ever if they could ever get a house. Or you know, these things are becoming increasingly hard. The pressures of life, the pressures of you know, we'll maybe and just end up in big community groups that are just there to try and save country. You know, most people that I've seen that have put their bodies on the line to fight for country have never gone hungry. They'll always find something, because the river provides. I call it the Barbara Bajidina, which is the river dreaming. The rain falls down from the clouds out into the mountains, down into the rivers. We drink from the rivers, and then that river goes out into the ocean. Ocean goes back up into the clouds, back down to the mountains, back down to the river again, recirculating, constantly going around and around. That's the river dreaming, and that's that, because every human has all been living by a river system for generations upon generations, for thousands and thousands of years. So that's what connects all of us together. And when people are fighting on the front lines and they're doing actions and stuff like that, there's community support there for those type of people. Not always, but a lot of the time there is, and it's a fulfilling task, I guess, that I need to try and show people that it's something that feeds your soul and doesn't take from your soul. Because if you're fighting for something that can't defend itself, then you're feeding your soul with good things, and you don't feel so miserable. How many people were happy at Rising Tide? You know what I mean? Like, they're the most happiest people I've ever met. Everyone's there for that. You know what I mean? They're not angry at the coal company because they're taking a ship out, and they're like, "Yeah, damn you."
No.
They're like, "Yeah, we're gonna block your ship. We're gonna block your ship." And it's the one thing that they hate more than anything is us having fun. They don't want you to have fun because they don't understand what it is to be happy. They lived their whole life trying to accumulate money because they thought money was going to bring them happiness. But it doesn't, because it just brings them more problems. And more problems means more unhappiness, because problems equals unhappiness. And so they're forever unhappy. And then when they see someone that is happy, like me, you know what I mean? I'm just always happy out in the bush because I'm in the bush. And they can't stand it. They get so salty about it because I've got a smile on my face, and they can't understand that. So, and being happy is the number one best tool to use against them.
Before we go, could I just ask you? I'm going to play one of your songs called G Up. I was looking at some of the songs you've got online, and it's
Yep.
for the listeners, it's a video with him with Garagula walking down this sort of red earth track with bush on the side, and then the children come in from the side, a few more people come in this, and there's a crowd of people coming down the street, and you're doing your rap singing. It's called G Up, and it was in dedicated to Gomeroi people who are fighting gas fracking by Santos in the Pilliga. Can you just tell us a bit about that song?
Yeah, so the Gomeroi have been fighting against Santos for years now, like 10 years or something. And I've grown up with Gomeroi people, and I remember them at school when they were fighting against like Whitehaven, and so they've been fighting for a long time. And since Santos, when they all said no at the native title meeting, when they all first said no, that I guess inspired me to write a song that, I try to write music that will inspire people, because I understand that as a musician, I have the ability to create spells, and those spells invoke things inside of people. And if I can invoke something inside of someone by getting them to repeat my words, then they're spelling themselves and they're inspiring themselves, and they're having this thing that enforces something inside of themselves, because it's like positive affirmations. It's like you have to tell yourself things for it to happen, it's weird like that. But that's what I enjoy about making music, is to inspire the Gomeroi to stand up and fight back. Because we get so caught up with other things like football and tennis and all of these different sports and everything, but
especially as Aboriginal people, without country and animals, we have no culture. It is just a culture by a book if we don't have those things. So we need to fight for those things to fight for our culture. So they come hand in hand, and without country, there is no culture, and without culture, what's the use of country? And so, inspiring is my number one aim at when I'm writing this music. I understand that there's a lot of negativity out there in other songs, and I just like, well, I have to try and empower people. And I feel like that's a big reason why a lot of the mainstream media, mainstream stations don't play my music. They don't like me empowering Indigenous people. They'll play a lot of Indigenous artists that will have sad songs, and that talk about pain and the trauma and things like that. But they'll never play you a song on giving you the keys to open that door and walk through it, because the industry doesn't want that. It wants you hooked on anger. It wants you hooked in a state of helplessness,
Well,
where
it's like all the propaganda that keeps us believing we are top dogs and there's nothing, that nature, we're not part of nature, we're this sort of top of the pyramid, all this propaganda. We swallow a lot of stuff, but I reckon you do inspire people with what you're just living, what you've described, the way you're living there, when people can come up to your to Wadanagu and you see the ceremony and just the songs. I reckon it's all full of energy. It just gives energy to people. So as I said, next year is going to be a hard year for coal, oil, and gas, isn't it? So I hope.
Well, it'll be the 5 year anniversary as well next year. So hopefully we'll have a lot of people, and hopefully it'll be the farewell event, you know what I mean? So hopefully we'll be waving the mining company goodbye. And if not, then we wait it out even further, you know what I mean? Because I got all the time in the world. I can sit here until I'm old and gray, and because I do it out of principle. I've done it with nothing. I've done it with just laying in the dirt with nothing else, saying, I don't care about anything else. Nothing else matters to me except sitting here and making sure that you know that I know that you know that I'm here. And with a
On that,
fire, that's what makes sure that you know that I'm here.
have to say goodbye. Beck's cheering. Bye-bye, Beck. Only 1 minute to go. We're going to be cut off, but thanks very much for talking to us,
No worries.
talking to
Cheers.
all of
Appreciate the
Melbourne and all of Sydney. They'll all be listening, and I hope we can all meet again next year with more fire in the belly, as you've said. Thanks very
Awesome.
much. That was
No worries.
Garadula up in Queensland, just perched on the corner of the Adani mine. As you heard at Wadanagu. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
If you or someone you care for is struggling with a mental illness or other disability and you need someone to talk to, you can call the Wellways Helpline. Wellways Helpline is a volunteer support and referral service that provides information to people experiencing mental health issues or other disabilities, as well as their family, friends, and carers. We're here to talk if you are feeling socially isolated, seeking information about mental health or mental health services, or just need someone to talk to. As a peer-based service, everyone working at Wellways Helpline has a lived experience of mental health issues or disability. Wellways Helpline is a national service and operates Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., excluding public holidays. So if you're struggling yourself or are struggling to help someone else, please call Wellways Helpline on 1300 111 500. That's 1300 111 500. Wellways supports 3CR.
This song is from Jaden Kitchener Waters, who is a Gomeroi man and public servant. I've lost a few listeners over the year because I've brought in too many references to Palestine, they say. But I hope you will understand. I recorded this at a Palestine rally and I noted that he's a Gomeroi man. I know that the Gomeroi people are fighting off Santos gas. And Jaden had the conscience to write on his guitar, "No pride in genocide."
People might know Jaden Pitcher's awarded. He is a Gomeroi musician who recently tried to perform a song at a New South Wales Premier's event function. He volunteered his abilities, his beautiful talents, to sing a song at that event. But of course, he committed the great crime of having written on his guitar the words, "No pride in genocide." Statement that we oppose the genocide, and that is deemed to be too political for the parliament. Right.
May I just get back a little bit? This guitar's really dangerous. So yeah, as I said, I couldn't perform this song at a Premier Department event because the words on this guitar are too political. Have your hands in tight, keep it safe and neat. Promise I won't tear them out, hark into the breeze. Trojan horse riding on the slowly breaking down. Soon enough the world will know truth is coming out. Standing there and talking with your AI written speech. And tourism and promises you can never keep. Lock the door behind you so nobody lives around. Wash your hands and pray to God it takes away the blood. You can't convince a conqueror to let go of their sword. You can't convince me you don't hear them frightening the hope. Blood stains on that Bible in the book you've never read. Another day pretending, another baby dead. Drown out all the crying with a new F-35. Bomb that little baby boy, leave him there to die. Justify the job you've done by calling it a war. Told us that same story when their ships came to the shore. You can't convince a conqueror to let go of their soul. Can't convince me you don't hear them crying in the woods. Blessings in the Bible, in that book you've never read. Another day pretending, another baby day. Another day pretending, another baby day.
This isn't a fight just for black people, just for brown people, just for people that care about the oppressed. This is for all of us, and we need to be reminding all of our friends right across this state of the terrible things that our government's doing. This isn't just for all of us here that are standing here today. This is for everyone in New South Wales. There's going to be a fucking revolution, and everyone is going to be a part of it.
Our final speaker is Surya McEwen. People will recognise Surya probably. He was one of the brave participants on the recent global Samud flotilla. But the flotilla, of course, was so important in shining a spotlight again on this atrocity and helping to mobilise so many people around the world. And there's going to be more to come. So thank you, Surya.
How amazing was Jaden's song before? The struggle that he's involved in at the moment is really important to support, to follow, and to build with him. Our settler government is going after him, whose land this is, for trying to play a song with a guitar that said "No pride in genocide." Jaden Kitchener Waters, follow his socials, go to the snap rallies, support the thing that's happening, because our state is going after him, and we need to stand beside him.
Yeah.
Thanks to Matthew Jeffrey from Rising Tide, to Gurujula from the Wangan and Jagalingu cultural custodians. Thanks to Sunny and to Beck who helped me, and to Jaden Kitchener Waters for his song at the Palestine Rally in Sydney. My name is Vivian Langford. Goodbye and good luck.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared. It's coal. It's coal. It's coal.
Tune in every Monday at 5 p.m. to hear the Climate Action Radio Show.
Yeah.